Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, DJ and your team. You can press the mic if you want to talk. Thank you. We're waiting for the computer guys to connect us, to get us connected. Where are they? Yeah. Okay, then as we still settling, people can grab something to drink, have coffee, and we wait for the ICT people. Hi. Good morning, good morning. Now you wake up. You're not late, right? You came right on time. We started 1 minute before 10. And we're still waiting for these guys to set up the system. We slept here.
What is it? Sit back. Go ahead.
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, DM and the team. This is the city, the standing committee on education, technology, sports and arts and culture. We're looking at your report, your annual report performance report, from the look of things, just looking at the AG's report, things are not as good as they're supposed to be. The impression created is that the department is going downhill in a shopping basket, no breaks. The provinces that got clean audit went down, the Western Cape also. There's some improvement here and there in others, but it doesn't look good. And as you present your report, some of the things we'll want to hear is, what is it that we're going to do to turn things around? Some of the mistakes that the finance that we are doing are committing are high school accounting mistakes, overstating and understating things. Either people are doing it deliberately, or it's accounting high school mistakes. And maybe when you give your report, you'll tell us why. Maybe some of the people who leave the department, maybe a lot of people from your finance and SCM have left, so you've got new ones. I don't know. We'll get that when you give your presentation. I don't think we need introduction. We are not meeting for the first time. I'll give over to you, DM, to take us through. But before that, there are apologies, and I'll give to the committee acting committee secretary to tell us what the to give us the apologies. Yeah, sure.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning to honourable members and the department. I have four apologies. One for the minister, who is attending a cabinet meeting, and the other apologies are for three members. Honourable Lehihi is not feeling well today, and Honourable Gillion is attending the concept note re-children meeting in the NA, and also Honourable Maleka, she's got family commitments. Thank you, Chair.
I must say, Honourable Lehihi was with us in our 8 o'clock meeting. So she had some complications. She had to leave and go to the doctor. She was here earlier. Thanks. Over to you, dear.
Thank you, Chair. And we even welcome your input by the report of the Auditor General. Even yesterday, there was a joint and extended cabinet meeting wherein Auditor General was presenting. Indeed, it is not good. It does not look good. In government as a whole, the issue was really, is there a willingness, is there a political will? Because if there is a political will, we cannot keep on complaining. Things must be done well. And one of the things that we've identified is that sometimes other managers, responsibility managers, will think that issues of audit are issues of CFO and finance. Yet, if you are a responsibility manager, there's a budget that is attached to your responsibility, and you must also account to that. So even there was a suggestion, which maybe will be processed after consultation, that in the performance agreement of officials, all from DG up to the assistant director, also, as long as there's a budget in your space, there must be that performance agreement on audit, because we all look at it to the CFO, yet it's a management function. But we believe that enough is enough. Consequences, but We don't want to rely on consequences. We want to rely on corrective measures than, like in the hospital, you can't just, I'm going to build hospitals, many hospitals for sick people, while you can prevent the sicknesses. So that's what the government must do, and that's what has been agreed upon yesterday in the meeting. And here we are here to present, because in some other instances, of course, there's no correlation between the target and the expenditure. So you ask yourself, if you have spent all the budget but you have not achieved all the targets, where did the money go to? Which is another problem which, as a department, we are looking forward to correct that. But what's made this department this year to be qualified is the issue of infrastructure. We don't want to point fingers at other people. Yes, it's not us who performs the extra function, but we monitor. We plan, we monitor, and we must make sure that we get all the necessary documentation. And it is done by other stakeholders, like your DBSA. The project might be concluded, but when we have to bring the completion certificate, Auditor General wants the completion certificate, there's no completion certificate, there's no this, because it's still in the pipeline. Those are the things, and it's not for the first time. Last, they told us that next, if you repeat this mistake, we are going to qualify you, because we told you, you must get all your papers correct. You cannot say no, the school or sanitation facilities are complete, yet you don't have the completion certificate, yet you don't have this and that, which Auditor General want to have. So this is what we are working on, but we have strengthened, of course, our infrastructure unit in the department, which means I think from now moving forward, things must be better. We cannot, when we have appointed those professionals, and we come again with the same excuses. So today we are here to present the program annual report on the performance of the Department of Education. So, Chair, as you know, that we have 5 programs, we are going to report on that, and I'm with the acting DG. Yeah, I think the full team here from the Department of Education, Basic Education, I'm with the acting DG, who will hand over to him, who will assign who starts.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. Chair, before I ask Ms. Nogadeliwe to start with the presentation, I just want to introduce you. We've got 2 new appointments at the level of DDG. The one is Mr. David van der Westhuizen. He's a chief engineer. Like the Deputy Minister said, he's been appointed to strengthen our infrastructure program. He's the head of infrastructure in the department now, ACD. Yeah. And then we've got the chief information officer that's also been appointed, Mr. Shalom Nyken. And he'll assist us with the ICT rollout. That's right. So Ms. Nogadeliwe will start a chairperson, and then the CFO will take us through the financials. Thank you.
Yeah, over to you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. So I'm going to present
you
on
just
our...
just introduce us to you, yeah. That's what we forgot. So we hear your designation, so that when we read the document, don't, oh, SCM, that's the one.
Thank you. So my name is Carol Nogadeliwe. I'm in charge of planning, monitoring, and... My name is Carol Nogadeliwe. I'm a chief director, strategic planning, research, and coordination. So I'm responsible for planning, monitoring, and evaluation in the Department of Basic Education. My apologies. So I'm going to present on the annual report for 2018-19 against the predetermined objectives of in the annual performance plan for the department. But because we are also sitting in quarter two, we're sitting after the audit report, and we're sitting in quarter two of the audit improvement planning and progress reporting, I'm going to reflect on some of the things that have been done so far, especially to remediate some of the shortfalls that we found in the annual report. Is that in order, Honorable Chairperson? I'm going to go straight to, as DM has indicated, we have five programs, and I'm going to go straight to slide four just to look at the different programs. I'm going to also focus on program performance, especially in regard to the tables, but also areas of achievement and weakness that we've sought to remediate since the annual report. So if that's appropriate, then I'll go straight through. So slide five then looks at program status. I apologize, the IT systems seem to be giving us problems, so I'm going to just do it manually. We look at, every year we look at how we did the year before against the current year. So we looked at, reflected on 2017-18 and also our performance in 2018-19 just to see if we are improving. Not, apparently there's the technician that's coming. It's very difficult to see. So they've called the technician.
Sorry to interrupt. I think there's a suggestion that as the presentation is done, there are some interventions that have already been done, if I got it correctly. I wanted to suggest that, Chairperson, that we deal with the key areas in terms of the report itself and then get to interventions, so that we don't get interventions or corrective measures in the middle of the presentation as it is, because we might then be confused in terms of following process. Just a suggestion, Chair.
Yes, I think I opened the meeting by asking questions and comments. So, but I was just saying that when we give you a report, have that in mind, that we're not happy. You know, we're not happy with what we got from the AG. So no, continue. I think the IT guys will get us there.
Thank you very much for that. So I'm looking at slide five, which looks at the program status after slide four, comparing our levels of achievement between 2017-18 and 2018-19. Slide six actually represents it diagrammatically. It's easier to see. And you will see that in terms of our achievement levels, even though we have more targets in 2018-19, we had higher levels of achievement as at the end of quarter four, as at the end of the year. So slide six illustrates this, that we've actually been able to improve our service delivery and reduce those not achieved and partially achieved areas. And as DM indicated, they are there, particularly in relation to the infrastructure program. 2014-18 annual performance, we then also looked at, in slide seven, the changes in the numbers of indicators over the years since 2014 and the percentage of achievement. And you'll see that since 2014-15, there's been an upward trend in the numbers, so there are more indicators, but also similarly then, especially since 2016-17, an improvement in achievement levels at the end of the year. That's slide seven. So part A, we're looking at the service delivery environment in terms of our legislative mandate on slide 8 and 9 and the statutory roles of the National Department to oversee and formulate policy norms and standards and monitoring and evaluation in the sector in support of provision of basic education. So we look at NEPA, and particularly now as we are developing our new strategic plan for the sixth administration for the next 5 years, we're looking also at this particular role rather than anything else. So slide 10 just looks at that. Slide 11 looks at our particular MTSS priorities. This annual report refers to the last MTSF, which was 2014 to 2019. And so we have to reflect on what we said we would do and what we actually did. The new MTSF is in the process of approval by Cabinet, and that relates to the priorities that the President announced in the SONA earlier this year, the State of the Nation address earlier this year. So slide 11 just covers the key priorities: quality of living, teaching and learning, materials, infrastructure, development and provisioning, assessment for learning, early childhood development. You'll see that that is something that carries over into the new administration, including the quality of grade R and support for pre-grade R provisioning. Management at the school, community and district level, and partnerships for education reform and improved quality. Slide 11 looks at our response to the National Development Plan as the department in terms of the action plan to 2024, which has now been updated to 2030. And the goals look at how we intend to improve learning outcomes, the quality of our provisioning, whether it's in terms of district support, inclusive education, health and well-being, school infrastructure, school funding, resourcing, participation in democratic processes at school level, school management, material provisioning, reading in support of reading in all languages, textbook provisioning, curriculum coverage, as well as teachers, teacher professionalization development, and the environment within our class, in our classroom. We also look at attracting young new teachers into the system. So that's the how, what we want to do. And on the right-hand side of that wheel, on slide 11, is what we want to do. We want to improve literacy and numeracy performance. We want to improve the high-level passes in the matric. We want to improve certain subjects, not only these subjects, but certainly certain high-profile subjects, but also then at grade 3, 6, and 9, and 12, to ensure participation that is meaningful, that contributes to a safe and inclusive society. We want to improve access to quality ECD, and we want to improve efficiency of our system, both at from early childhood grade R right through to FET, and now obviously pre-grade R. So those are the things we would want to do, and they're reflected in our action plan, which we call the sector plan, in the sector as a response to the National Development Plan. Slide 13 then just looks at the highlights between the last year, which is on the right-hand side, the year that's under review that we're reporting on against the year before. So 2018-19 is this report, this annual report. And we're just reflecting on how things have changed since the last time we reflected on annual performance. So slide 13 looks at the number of full-time students and part-time candidates who wrote the NSC. And those have improved by 90,000 almost. The pass rate, which has increased by 3 percentage points, the bachelor passes, which is 172,000 out of the cohort of 624,000, an increase of just around 21,000 since the 2017 NSC exam. Slide 14 looks at the huge number of materials and workbooks that were delivered to schools, and you can see that the numbers have increased from grade R to grade 9. Just the logistical capacity in the department and the ability to monitor this material provisioning is something that is unrivaled in many countries, both industrialized and developing countries. So it's something really that one needs to look at and to applaud in this sector. We had Funza Lushaka graduates who were eligible for placement at 85% in the year, and that was the target that we had for the year. We had 108 teacher education programs which were evaluated for quality as opposed to 95 in the previous year. Slide 15 looks at the number of qualified educators appointed under the age of 30, 16,461, an increase of just about 1,500 over the year before. Similarly, labs that were provided and supplied with consumables, equipment, and apparatus, subject-related apparatus, up by 200, to just under 200 in that year. slide 16 then looks at the NSNP monitoring. I must just confirm that this annual report is about the National Department of Basic Education. It complements what provinces who receive the majority of the funding in the sector also do. So when we talk about monitoring school feeding 137 in 2018-19, this is on top of what the provinces are monitoring and what the information that we get around that monitoring and support of those schools to complement what the provinces do, in addition to developing policies, evaluating the implementation program, and improving the log jams in the school feeding program. So I'm going to go to now to specific programs supported from slide 17 onwards. So program one looks at administration. It looks at the sort of engine of the national department and some key indicators that are related to it. I'm going to just take you through slide 19 just to show how the tables are constructed. We have the performance indicators on the left-hand side, what we said we would do and how we said we would measure it. We have the 2017 achievement, just to get a sense of what we did last year, and what the targets were in 2018-19, slide 19. What were the targets were, what we actually achieved, especially in terms of the audited achievement, and what the deviation from the planned target was, and any comments on the deviations. And some of those comments on the deviations, as the Honourable Member had indicated, will come out in terms of our audit improvement plans and in terms of the interventions later on. So I won't speak too much to some of those. So we have the slide 19, which looks at service providers who are paid within 30 days, a very key and important driver of economic development. We had actual achievement 1,459 out of 1,473. So our deviation was 0.95%, that should say. And we had indicated that the invoice days tracker tool system needs to be developed to make sure that we increase that and improve that. We had a percentage of received misconduct cases resolved within 90 days. We're green on that. We had actual achievement 100%, and our target was 85% annually. So there are also annual targets, and there are quarterly targets, which are easier to monitor per quarter. In relation to received grievance cases resolved, again, three were received and finalized, and our actual achievement was 42% as against 85%. And some of the reasons related to just availability of the parties to the grievance within the prescribed days. So some of those were exceeded because of their just lack of availability of the parties in relation to resolving those cases. Slide 20, 21, 22, and 23 just look at the kinds of things that we do. So we have corporate services that are reported, training and social responsibility, and the number of employees who attended training, labor relations, work on disciplinary and other cases, as well as the compliance planning and reporting. So the tabling of the annual reports, quarterly reports, 25-year review, development of the 25-year review report on slide 23, some work around the medium-term strategic framework and developing that with the presidency colleagues and the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. Capacity building with provinces in data analysis and the use of data to track their program delivery, as well as with districts. We also have on slide 25 an early grade reading study, which we're using to help to develop better models for improving language and reading acquisition in the African languages. We're doing that in Northwest and Mpumalanga, and spreading to other provinces. There's also, on slide 26, the work that we're also doing with the National Department of Transport
on evaluating the learner transport program so that we can improve the implementation of this. This was done in the year. So these are the highlights of program one. Slide 27 just looks at some of the other things that we do in program one, organizing interprovincial and intergovernmental meetings. Slide 28 looks at communication and advocacy, social media activity around basic education, and it's very encouraging to see that there's a lot of interaction between the public and the department through some of these meetings. Slide 29 quantifies a lot of these interactions. Slide 30, parliamentary queries are things that we have managed to respond to, and in slide 31, you can see the division of labor, if you like, in terms of those responses and the interest. Then in slide 32, the work of the department, the director general in his provincial engagements, monthly meetings, quarterly meetings with entities, the monitoring of spring, winter, and autumn classes and marking centers, and the development of business processes. One of the things that we've been doing is developing electronic business processes to improve efficiency in how we deal with admin and administrative processes in the department. So servers that were procured and adjustments to templates made for the introduction of an electronic submission process. Slide 33, which is not numbered, has pictures of the Director General interacting with students in his frequent visits to provinces, monitoring on oversight visits. So slide 35 also indicates the work of internal audit and risk management. So internal audit is a really important unit in the department. It is something over the last 2 or 3 years where there's been quite a lot of work just to strengthen it. Previous to that, our internal audit capacity was very, very weak. And so we have really boosted. There's a lot of work still to be done in terms of boosting the capacity for internal audit and risk management, but that work is reflected on, some of that work is reflected on slide 35, but obviously we can strengthen in this area, especially in response to the audit findings. We have a lot of reviews of internal controls in slide 36 as well, related to the ACD project, internal processes, performance information, follow-up on exams processes, the internal management performance assessment tool, and basically just following up on the evidence and the data and information that justifies the claims that we make about our performance. And that unit is critical in that. And we're looking forward to strengthening that work in the coming years. Program 2 looks at curriculum, policy, support, and monitoring on slide 37. And those, this is almost the teaching and learning engine of the department and of the sector, responsible for curriculum policy, monitoring, and support. Slide 38 and 39 just confirm the achievements and the highlights that I had indicated to digital content, which was produced and packaged and distributed. We planned to have 15. We delivered 15. Schools which were monitored for using ICT resources, we planned for 27 and we achieved 27. Offline digital content resources developed annually, we planned for 8, we achieved 8. And then slide 39 just takes you through the different kinds of maths and language workbooks for grade R to 9 that we produce and we deliver to schools. So there was no deviation on those, so those were green. Slide 40 and 41 look at monitoring of different interventions from the department. Implementation of reading norms, African languages, the introduction of African languages in schools, and the early grade reading assessment. So this is the department's side of the monitoring oversight. It complements the provinces and what they do in support of these programs. So we planned for 20 monitoring visits, and we achieved 22, 20, and 92. The achievement in relation to the monitoring norm, the reading norm, was really because
the provinces asked for additional monitoring, schools to monitor. So we went ahead with what the provinces had lined up. And similarly, for early grade reading assessment, which is a tool for assessing reading in the foundation phase, provinces also wanted us to go with them to monitor some of the schools, more schools, to assess the success or and use and utility of the tool. So we had to go ahead and exceed our targets of 75 by another 17. So because it's a concurrent function and because it's about partnership, we made a plan while we were in provinces to add additional monitoring visits sometimes into way past the time that we expected to. Slide 41 then looks at the math, science, and technology lesson plans, which were developed for different phases and different grades in math, science, and technology. Mm-hmm. We had targeted to have monitoring annually, and our actual achievement was 34 lesson plans developed and monitored for different grades, as you will see in the green on slide 41, and 12 technical science lesson plans which were monitored. In future, we will be monitoring those separately. Slide 42 looks at the teacher guides to accompany those lesson plans. So the lesson plans and the teacher guides. We had work that was done on developing the teacher guides, but it was not sufficient to, we weren't sufficient, didn't have enough time sufficiently to finalize that. And so that was a deviation from our plan target. So we had diagnostic reports that we developed, and they will be used then for delivery in 2020, 21, and 21, 22. Slide 23 looks at workshops, CAPS monitoring in technical schools, and CAPS monitoring in technical subjects, and you will see our plan targets are green, achievements were green, indicating that they were sufficient. But in terms of CAPS monitoring for technical subjects, we deviated by 4. We achieved less than we thought that we would because provinces did not conduct training as expected. This training happens at provincial level, and it didn't happen. Provinces were supposed to sign service level agreements with service providers, and they didn't do that, and we were only able to find out about this late in the year. So we've improved our monitoring system in that respect. Slide 44 and 45 look at the schools with multi-grade classes which are implementing a toolkit for instruction and learning in multi-grade, in schools with more than one grade in a class. We had more monitoring than we expected, and we targeted by just 2. So our achievement was +2. We will continue. Then rural education advocacy campaign. We conduct one of these as loan. So with that. We have 9 advocacy campaigns which should have been conducted on rural education policy framework, and we did conduct those. We also had the second chance program. We had a target to cover 25,000, and we exceeded that target because we had advocacy campaigns that were run by our partners as well in the higher education community in partnership with NGO support service centers, and that exceeded our expectations by 40,000, just under 40,000 students. So more students, there's huge demand for the Second Chance program, huge demand that we have to cater for, and therefore we have to think about this in relation to the recent, in future, and the recent budget cuts. Slide 45 looks at the programs and curriculum for learners with severe and profound intellectual disabilities who use this learning program, and also those who have access to psychosocial support. We exceeded our actual achievement to almost double what we planned. And we also, this was really in relation to the increase in the number of special care centers distributed to around the provinces. And the colleagues will, from that section, will explain further. So slide 46 then looks at what I've said in narrative form. Slide 47 just looks at confirmation by province of the learners who are accessing workbooks. We can say that this is what we've done, but we look at household survey data from Statistics of Africa to really verify some of what we say that we've done as an independent check, but also in terms of our accountability. So slide 47 looks at the tables in relation to mass workbooks and language workbooks accessed by province. So I think this committee would be very interested in this, just those levels of access by province. And they're over 95% on average in right through the country. Similarly, we also monitor, we monitor our own administrative internal data, but we also look at what people say that they have access to. And learners accessing textbooks by province, again, you see the variation in learner access by province. I think this is missing a legend in the chart. The legend that's missing. The blue bars really indicate learner access by province, and then the orange and the top bars, basically, we'll have to amend that. The top bars, the orange bars, just look at varying levels of access. So the blue bars are really when they say that they have access to all their textbooks, and the other bars look at varying levels of access, which are lower than that. So we'll have to correct that slide and include the legend from our side. Program slide 49 looks at the provision of ICTs across the country, and slide 50 looks at the curriculum implementation and for 0 to 4 year olds. How many practitioners were trained, severe intellectual disability curriculum statements that were used, and the training for personnel in special schools. Slide 51 looks at the 0 to 4 year olds attending ECD facilities. This is everybody. This is extracted from Statistics South Africa Demographic Surveys. So it's everybody. It doesn't matter where they are, whether they are in social development, private, etc. This is just coverage of 0 to 4 year olds. And it's interesting, we have been monitoring these particular indicators for a long time because of our interest in early childhood. And now that we have the migration, these data systems will be much more important as we go forward. So it looks at the over years, and then in slide 52, we look at the participation in ECD facilities, which has increased from 30.4 in 2009 to 44.3 in 2018, and that's the breakdown in different provinces. So you will see, for instance, that there are some provinces where ECD migration is really more pressing than others. It also indicates, in some cases, just how much planning and data and information work needs to happen to support this migration. That's slide 52. Slide 53 just confirms what we know from the Statistics South Africa side, what we know about attendance in grade R, that it's almost universal, and also that it's been universal for quite a while. And what obviously the issues are in our ECD migration is not just to migrate ECD, but to still work on the quality of grade R provisioning and how it plays itself out later on in schools. Slide 54 then looks at these percentages, near universality by province. And you can see on average between slide 53, it looks fairly rosy. Everything is in the 90s, mid-90s. But then in certain provinces, you have differences in certain provinces. Gauteng and Northern Cape, for instance, and even Western Cape, all the way up to Free State with universal universal preparation of learners in who attend grade one. The Gauteng issue may be related also to in-migration, so that some children, for instance, who are attending grade one from other provinces, for instance, who haven't attended grade R, but they come into schools in Gauteng unprepared, and then that has implications for them, how foundation phase support is structured. Slide 55 then looks at the training of teachers in screening, identification, and assessment and support, and also specialized teacher training in Braille, South African Sign Language, dealing with autism and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Slide 55. Slides 56 and 57 really confirm some of the numbers related to this training, monitoring, curriculum coverage, and support, if you like, and study guides for business studies, agricultural sciences, and other subjects. We have particularly a huge amount of work to train teachers, subject specialists, subject advisors on different subjects, and that is included in this slide. The Ministerial Task Team 558 report on history was made public in the middle of 2018, and that then obviously has implications for the history curriculum. Exam guidelines, exemplars were developed and distributed to schools, and school visits and monitoring, as I mentioned earlier, for languages, for assessment tools, and for reading norms included as on slide 59. Slide 60 just confirms what we did in the second chance matric, and material development and the candidates who wrote. Program 3 looks at teachers. So teachers and school management, school governance, institutional development, and education human resources. So the tables start on slide 62, and they really look at the effectiveness of school governing bodies and the work related to management of schools, particularly in relation to the documents available at schools and as a proxy, if you like, for their effectiveness. We know that this is not just because you have management system, management documents in schools, that doesn't mean that the school is well managed, but it's a start. There are resources there, and we use these resources then when we plan our interventions in future. So we monitor this. And against our targets, we were green, 80% of our sample schools. We do a special sample survey of school governing bodies and schools to check if they are effective in terms of the criteria for effectiveness. And we find that governing bodies are beginning to understand their roles and responsibilities better, and better monitoring of governing bodies' activities is happening. Slide 63 looks at the number of Funza Lushaka bursaries. Funza Lushaka bursaries are awarded to students to enroll and to participate in initial teacher education in an attempt to boost teacher supply. So we had a target of 13,500. We actually had issued many more awards than 13,500, but in terms of just the audit, we had to, the auditors when they came in indicated that actually what they would do is to look at the number of students who eventually were funded through the NSFAS. Funza Lushaka is administered on behalf of the department by NSFAS. So even though we had awarded many more than the target, we had to readjust our achievement levels that were reported because of this requirement from the AG. So going forward, we will be much more careful and strict about how we quantify performance, and the comments on the deviations then note that fact. So we deviated by 430. We also know that not everybody that we award actually takes up the place at the university. Some drop out later on, and that's part of that deviation. Slide 64 looks at
the preparation of teachers in terms of subject content knowledge. We know that one of the key factors in impeding and blocking children from learning and from achieving at school is subject content knowledge of the teachers. So in support of this, the department is developing and set out to develop tools in different subjects to test and diagnose any weaknesses in teachers' subject content knowledge. Obviously, this has to be done confidentially, but also then to be able to get teachers to remediate this. So there are programs to help teachers through subject content, those teachers who are already teaching subject content knowledge weaknesses, to remediate these so that they can then go back. And these are self-administered tests. And we had planned to have 2,000. Our actual achievement was 2,029, 2,008, 2,035 for EFAL, which is English First Additional Language, Physical Science and Accounting, and we exceeded those targets at the end of quarter four. Similarly, math we exceeded by 1,339, and we had a lot more teachers who were actually presenting themselves for self-assessment. Again, it's something that is contested in the sector in relation to teachers, but I think that teacher unions and teachers themselves get a better understanding of how they can improve their own subject content knowledge, we know that this will gain traction. Slide 66 looks at monitoring. Monitoring of teacher performance, monitoring of performance management of personnel in provincial departments, monitoring of post-provisioning. And all 9 provinces are monitored, 6 of the provincial departments are monitored for the first 2 indicators, and so there was no deviation. Slide 67 looks at the detail of the monitoring, how many schools, which provinces, on various aspects of work, the integrated quality management system, the job descriptions, monitoring of principals, the monitoring of school readiness assessment, and also the pay progression and post-provisioning. Slide 68 and 69 just look at other details relating to the beneficiaries of training on IQMS, performance agreement reviews, skills development, provincial engagement and support, and monitoring, post-evaluation, educator evaluation monitoring in provinces. Slide 70 looks at the appointment. So it's fine to give out these bursaries, but we need to also see whether people are actually being appointed, whether the teaching service is being transformed in terms of young and qualified teachers, and we see the numbers there on slide 71 of Funza Lushaka placements, for instance. So as at September 2019, we have updated information per province on placement rates, those who were placed and those who were not placed. We find that that has a knock-on effect just at system level. Reporting this information for Funza Lushaka bursary holders has a knock-on effect on other placement reporting of non-Funza, for instance, of other types of teaching staff across the provinces. And we're seeing that monitoring taking root in provinces in support of human resource planning in the provinces. So slide 71 looks at the levels of placement, and those levels in 2-3 years ago would have been in the 50s and 60s, and they've increased into, on average, 74%. We know that every month that passes, they increase. Slide 72 and 73 just look at the detailed work around the work that we do on education, human resource development, with the bargaining council, with award lists, with continuing professional development and training in with partners. The National Teacher Awards ceremony, which was hosted in February, as well as different surveys and sample surveys we do just to check what's happening in our schools. We have an umbrella body on slide 75, an umbrella program now, the Primary School Reading Improvement Program, which seeks to capacitate and add school teachers in teaching reading in line with the priorities, but also to improve literacy and reading outcomes for all learners in the foundation and intermediate phases. And there's a training that has indicated, training that has been done, 11,600 foundation phase teachers, subject advisors, benefiting approximately 500,000 learners across 9 provinces. Slide 76 looks at the training on library and information services, which took place in the following provinces, and those are indicated there. There's a promotion of the Read to Lead campaign, which is the advocacy part of the department's primary school reading improvement program. And there was the later development of the National Reading Coalition. Program 4 looks at planning, information, and assessment, slide 77. And slide 78 and 79 is really where we want to focus. So in support of assessment, what happens in classrooms is usually assessed, and that needs to, those assessments need to be developed carefully, need to be culturally acceptable, but they also need to be appropriate in terms of the grades that we assess. So we had targeted in the year to develop 328 test items, basically sort of components of test questions that could be used, and we were able to more efficiently, the plan target was 200, we actually achieved 328, and the deviation was 128, so we achieved more because the pilot study required a lot more items to be trialed. We had 4 reports on the National Senior Certificate that were produced. We had 260 question papers that were set for the National Senior Certificate and Senior Certificate. Slide 79 looks at the number of new schools built. So we had targeted 50. The actual achievement was 21, and we had deviated because the nature of construction and in the infrastructure industry is contracting and implementing agents in the Eastern Cape particularly, who had cash flow problems, organizational problems, were facing liquidation, and they were unable to, after the award of the contract, unable to meet targets. Construction also was affected by inclement weather, and some schools could not be completed because of water and electricity concerns in the localities where they were. Some closure of sites, and that's something that has dogged the sector, by concerned groups of contractors demanding that they be awarded some parts of project, and that is something that has been in the news around construction projects in the public sector more generally. Slide 80 looks at the water and sanitation targets, our plan targets. We underachieved for similarly the same concerns, and these concerns are systemic concerns in the industry. And related really to the capacity of contractors post award, the real capacity, rather than what is presented initially. The electricity targets were actually not included in 2018-19 because provinces took over the job of any electrification projects that had to be done. Effectively, by 2017-18, we had come to the end of the electricity projects in the city, and almost all schools, almost full coverage in the country schools. Slide 81 and onwards just looks at the nature of the facilities that are being developed and being rolled out in schools, provided over time. Slides 84 and 85 look at overall performance over the years, past performance of the project over different years, but also in the current year. Slide 85 looks at the provincial inappropriate structure progress and the nature and type of the implementing agent. So there are many implementing agents in different provinces.
operating on different in different spaces. As DM had said, progress over time varies. Some projects in construction and some completed over time. Slide 86 and 87 look at by province, those projects which are implemented, those projects which are in planning, design and procurement phase, and projects which are completed. Similarly, slide 87 looks at acidic water provisioning. Slide 88, those projects which are under implementation, under the sanitation project, safe allocation and EIG. Slide 89, the completed projects for sanitation by province. So I know that honorable members will be very interested in those particular slides. But in relation to the annual report of the department, we're looking at the slide 90, which looks really at the issues that were that came out of the annual report in terms of planning and implementation, which within the same year, the major cause of delay. Construction projects don't start and finish in the same year. And so a lot of the delays are related to the multi-year nature of construction. Procurement processes also in terms of the delay in commencement of construction after the award and project monitoring really to make sure that all projects are completed in time and the quality is up to standard. Those are the challenges that we confronted in the year. So all projects for the next financial years will be allocated at the beginning of the fourth quarter rather than within the year under review so that planning can commence and we can get completions finalized within by the beginning of the next financial year. And we are also increasing capacity to monitor project implementation within the department but also within provinces. So slide 91 then looks at the some of the other work that is done in this program in relation to school administration systems, the electronic management system, SASAM, school administration system and management system. So we have 98% achievement. We have for the LURIS, which is the implementation of the learner unit record database annually. We had one report covering the 9 provinces. This is a management information system which monitors basically what happens to learners at any given time. Slide 92 looks at the mentoring of district officials in areas of underperformance. And we had a target of 30, we achieved 76. But actually in the audit, we found that we had actually achieved even more. And the deviation from the planned target of 24, because support visits were accelerated, if you like, by senior management for the department, but in addition to the provinces. So there was more coverage. In relation to school principals rating the support services of districts as being satisfactory, we had planned for 71% and we achieved 75%, again, to improve the way that the satisfaction levels of schools, not just to say that we are actually going out to school, but are they really satisfied? We check this information every 2 or 3 years in a separate survey called the school monitoring survey, just to check that actually the information they're getting is correct and can be validated. Similarly, in slide 93, we look at the 90%, we targeted for 90% of district managers who are assessed against developed criteria, and the administration of competency tests is now mandatory, and all permanent appointments at district level will be assessed against developed criteria. So that planned target was 90%. We achieved 100%. 13 out of 13 new appointments in that year were assessed. We also had the release of the Teaching and Learning International Survey, which looks at teachers' experiences, teachers' perceptions, and that was successfully submitted to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. It's an international survey. South Africa is one of the few developing countries which participates in the survey, and that information is useful in crafting our teacher development, teacher planning, and teacher management policies in the future. We have various data sets and preparations for international surveys, such as the trends in international management, math and science study, which was completed for grade 5, and information on the NSC exams, which were written in 2018, is provided also on slide 94. The pictures there look at the DG and his monitoring of the metric marking centers on slide 95. Slide 96 looks at new technologies to improve assessment and exam systems. So we're wanting to incorporate some e-registration, e-remarking, e-checking business processes which were tested in the time. I'm going to go very quickly then to the district level planning work, management work, on-site visits. Slide 98 looks at the National Excellence Awards to recognize districts who have excelled in supporting their schools. The district support work that's been done, mentorship work that's been done, as well as the minister's quarterly engagements with districts in Pretoria to discuss various policy planning and management issues related to districts. So those are ongoing. They happen every 3 months, and they're very, very useful in terms of just testing what's happening at district level in the system. Slide 100 and 101 look at school readiness, presidential hotline, which is a hotline that we respond to as a basic education. We monitor the resolution rates. The call center also, people phone in with their problems and we resolve those, and we report on that by province, as well as other work related to education improvement, partnerships, and the kinds of partnerships we do, and slides 102 and 103, very indicative of the support that we have in the sector and in the country. Slides 105 then looks at Program 5, Education Enrichment Services. This is social cohesion, safety, nutrition, but also curriculum enrichment and care and support, wellness programs we have in this program. So the indicator table looks at the schools that are monitored, the professionals who are trained to host the Coral I Stedford. We had targets that we exceeded for those. Community members, parents, involved in social cohesion and gender equity programs on slide 106, and hotspot schools monitored for safety in terms of the implementation of the safety framework, the national school safety framework. Again, we exceeded our targets on those. Slide 107 looks at the health promotion, training, support, advocacy groups that we've had, programs that we've had and interventions we've had, number of learners on slide 108 who are reached through various social and personal development programs, keep girls in school, soul buddies, and then training, education training on sexual and reproductive health for learners. Just taking educators through how they can facilitate some of the material that is necessary to have and to equip learners with, young learners with, in today's world. So a total of 19,955 were trained by provinces, 8 million learners were dewormed, school feeding schemes, school feeding of the 12 million children we have in the sector, 9.6 million of them are fed every day at school. And that, in terms of just anti-poverty interventions, is something that is really, really critical, not just for education, but for social reasons. Like social support programs and visits to different provinces, and slide 109, and you will see on slide 110 per province the breakdown of learners benefiting from the school feeding scheme as per the household survey that I indicated earlier. You can see firstly that those numbers are increasing, the percentages are increasing,
The numbers are also increasing, and it's heartening to see that's the case. There will obviously be the difference between 81.9% and 100% might some of it might be choice. Some learners might just choose to bring scarcity lunch boxes to school, but we keep an eye on it just by province, just to get a sense of what's happening to learners. Gauteng levels, again, we have to check that data, but the other provinces are also there. Slide 111 looks at different partnerships with the ABC Motsepe grouping. The competition, the Coral Estate Fort, was held in Gauteng in June. Africa Day commemorated, Women's Day, Mandela Centenary, Youth Citizen Action Programs, and various jamborees events were held in support of social cohesion across the country. So in summary then, I want to just remind the honorable members and the honorable chair of slide 6 in relation to our target status for 2018-19, 85% achieved, an improvement of 13 percentage points from 2017-18, even though we had many more targets than we had in the previous year. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Chair and members. I'll start you on slide 115 that talks to the budget. On that slide, we show in the budget and expenditure per program. Our total budget was 23.
Just say your name.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, Chair.
Oh. So that we know your designation.
Oh. Thanks, Chair. My name is Pat Kuno. I'm the Chief Financial Officer, and I'm also the DPG in charge of finance and administration. As I said, our slide 115, budget per program. The total budget for the 2018-19 financial year for the department was 23,699,583,000. We spent 98.8% of that budget, which represents 23,414,767,000. Our spending per program on administration, we spent 99%, which is program one. Program two, we spent 96.8%. Program three, we spent 99.3%. Program four, we spent 98.4%. And program five, we spent 100%. On the next slide, we
just mention the slide number.
Oh, slide 116, sorry. Slide 116. Thanks, Chair. On slide 116, we giving reasons for material deviations. The one material deviation is on program two, which is curriculum policy support and monitoring, where we underspend by 59,498,000. The reasons for that underspending is due to unfilled vacant posts, including a deputy director post in the Free State and KZN. The other reason is that the learner teacher support material electronic system couldn't be procured on time due to CETA requirements that the proposal must include budget allocation for the outer years. The other reason is that the learners with special profound intellectual disability grant compensation of employees portion of that constitute 50% of this grant. But because these positions are not permanent, it is difficult to fill these, to recruit and fill these posts, simply because when you advertise, the people normally want permanence, so it becomes difficult to fill these posts. That's why you find that there's underspending in the compensation of employees portion of that grant. Program 3, we didn't have a material underspending, that is slide 117. On slide 118, on program 4, we underspend by 208 million. The reason is that the projects were estimated at plus minus 230 million, but the procurement process that we engaged in was halted due to challenges that we had with the Department of Trade and Industry on issues of local content. There was a misunderstanding between the two departments as to whether on this one we had to get local content or not. So that delayed. That's one of the reasons that delayed the spending. The other major delay was due to stoppage of our construction projects in the Eastern Cape, where that is a city project, where the Eastern Cape Black Contractors Association stopped most of the projects because they said they wanted to be given the projects. So we went forward and backwards at various meetings with them. Ultimately, the issue was resolved, but we had lost a lot of time, which resulted in underspending. Slide 119 is a breakdown of the same budget, but in this case, we're breaking it down per economic classification. Whereas slide 115 was per program, slide 119 is per economic classification. And what we are saying there is that for compensation of employees, we spent 96.2%. For goods and services, we spent 95.6%. Interest and rent on land, we spent 90.1%. Provinces and municipalities, we spent 100%. Departmental agencies and accounts, we spent 100%. Foreign governments and international organizations, we spend 100%. Non-profit institutions, we spend 100%. Households, we spend 100%. Building and other fixed structures, we spend 101.1%. Machinery and equipment, we spend 94%. Software and other intangible assets, we spent 138.8%, and payments for financial assets as well, we spent 118.5%. The total spending as per even the previous slide, 115, is 98.8%. The deviations, when we drill down to economic classification, is that on the workbooks project, not all the posts had been filled during the course of the year, but adverts had already gone out by the end of September this year. We've also done full analysis of the spending, and we identified certain savings where we then discussed with Treasury that they could give us permission to shift this to other projects which needed funding. That is slide 120, sorry. On slide 121, the talks to transfers and subsidies underspending due to learners with profound intellectual disability conditional grant.
I've already mentioned the reason for that, but in addition to that, bi-monthly and quarterly monitoring of the implementation of the provincial education department's procurement plans using the grant, bi-monthly expenditure tracking and analyzing of provincial monthly expenditure and quarterly reports, and through quarterly provincial budget monitoring and support meetings. This is the mitigating measures that we will put in place, or we've put in place. Targeted support meetings with specific provincial education departments whose performance will result in underspending, and supporting provincial education departments if permanent appointment of the outreach team members as late and non-appointment is a major contributor to underspending. On slide 122, payments for capital assets underspending, I've mentioned the one reason where we had Eastern Cape contractors giving us challenges, and that's the last bullet on there, on that slide 122. But the other bullets, procurement of the outstanding 61 projects is underway and targeting site handover at the beginning of the fourth quarter. We were targeting site handover, that is on track. Various concurrences have been given to the Mvula Trust in the Eastern Cape and should enable implementation of our water project in that area. Trans requisitions for both the Development Bank of South Africa and the Kuha Development Corporation of almost 200 million will be spent in the month of September 2019 to bring the expenditure to around 60% by the end of the second quarter. The ACD unit is engaging the Free State Department of Education on a realizable construction recovery plan to ensure that the expenditure on their program is ramped, and that is because the Free State Department of Education is one of our implementing agents, and it's one of those that are struggling with the implementation of the project and spending of the funds. The next slide is 120. Yeah, it's 123, but it shows 127. I think the numbering is it's just not as it should be. On this slide, Chair, we're showing from this slide onwards, we're showing the qualification issues in the 2018-19 financial year. And we're showing progress that we've made for the two quarters after the end of the financial year. Like, for example, the last two columns show progress at the end of quarter one, meaning at the end of June 2019, and the last column shows the latest progress as at the end of September 2019. The first issue that the Auditor General raised was on immovable capital, immovable tangible capital assets. And most, except for one, most of these issues are all ACD related. They're all infrastructure ACD related. So the AG raised the issue that there was an overstatement of capital assets and capital expenditure, as well as understatement of goods and services expenditure, meaning if you overstate your capital, you understate your goods and services, your operational costs. Just to explain, Chair, what happened here is that ACD started in 2012. And since that time up to only this financial year, the accounting for the costs within ACD was allowed to include everything. You know, for example, if you get a bond to build your house, you include every cost, whether it's cost for QSS, whether it's cost for whoever's salaries and wages, but that's the total cost. So that has been the case all along, but In the year under review 2018-19, the AG came back and said, this is the wrong way of doing it. We must split the costs between capital costs, and capital costs, they would only allow costs that go to professionals like QSs, engineers, architects. But any costs that relate to support services, salaries that relate to support services, they said, no, this must be split, and this must be shown as a operational or goods and services. It shouldn't be capitalized. It shouldn't be added to the cost of the schools. And they rely on a MCS guide, which is a treasury guide, which says that must be done. But by the time the AG raised this issue, they then said we must go back. They didn't just say for 2089. They said you must go back to when ASIDI started. And you can imagine how many schools and all that. We're talking about an estimation of 800 million that must be split. So that's why by the time the audit finished, this matter could not be resolved. We have so far started the splitting of those costs, and we've split about 300 million out of the 800 million. So our projection is that by the end of the current financial year, we should have done that split. We are nevertheless, now that we've got a new head of infrastructure and all that, and we've had those discussions, we are nevertheless going to be speaking to Treasury and the AG, because from the accounting side, it sounds okay, but from the engineering side, we are told that is the wrong way of doing it. So even if Treasury has got that in their guideline, it doesn't make it correct that you ignore those costs that still relate to the project simply because you are saying they are not direct costs. So as much as we are making the correction, We are still going to have to meet with Treasury and the AG to see how we can find each other. So that's the progress, Chair, on that. And then slide 128, it's commitment. The AG raised an issue of misstatement of commitments due to insufficient audit evidence. What has happened over since ASIDI started? Let me just go back so that at least we get the context. When ASIDI started in 2011-12, it was meant to be a temporary program, you know, a short-term program, because schools are ordinarily built in provinces. So this was just a program to eradicate inappropriate structures, the pit latrines and all that. But over the years, as we went along and did more research or more, we found that the projects are many. That's why we still have ASIDI as we speak. But because ASIDI was taken as a temporary measure, we didn't even have a permanent structure in place to monitor implementing agents and all that. So over the years, we've been operating with a skeleton structure. So it's only in the last year, in the last few months, that we started to recruit more people. As we said, we recruited Mr. Van der Beekhuizen, who started now in November as head of infrastructure. Before he started, in the last 2-3 months, we got the chief engineer in place. We've got a chief engineer in place. We recruited 3 QSs, 1 project manager. So we've got more. We've beefed up the monitoring portion, because what was the issue was that we've got implementing agents throughout the country running more than 300 or so projects, but within the department we didn't have adequate monitoring structures to monitor them. So that's why you find that our reporting on ASIDI causes us bad audit outcomes. Simply because when we say to implementing agents, give us this report, give us that, they don't give it to you on time. They don't give you accurate information. But we don't have the capacity to monitor that. So with the recruitments that we have now done, in the current financial year, we should start seeing improvements. So that's why you'd have an issue of misstatement of commitments. We would say to implementing agents, we're closing the financial year, end of May, give us information by the end of April so that we have a month. But you get information very late towards the end of May. You put it in the financials, only to find it's not the final information. When the AG goes to the implementing agents to verify the information that's in our financials, they get new information. That's why the AG would come up with your information is misstated. But as I've said, we've started to clamp down on that. On slide 129 is a continuation of the commitment. Slide 130. Contingent liabilities. What contingent liabilities are? You normally have your normal liabilities, things that you know you owe and you must pay. But contingent liabilities are liabilities which may or may not realize. In our case, it's situations where we are being sued by various parties for this or the other. I mean, the unfortunate situation maybe with the Komape case where a child in Limpopo fell into a pit latrine, they would sue the department. In the Eastern case, the same, but it's just those examples. Now, what then happens in accounting is that you need to disclose that as your contingent liability, whether ultimately you win or lose the case, but it must just be there as contingent liability. Now, over the years, the disclosure has been just the amount that we get on the lawsuit document, you know, from the state attorney. But the AG from this year has said, no, we're not happy with that disclosure. We want you to also disclose the possible interest that you pay. So we thought about it to say, but even the liability is contingent. It may or it may not realize, but we lost the battle, and the AG said, you must, going forward, disclose even the possible interest that you may pay. So with effect from the half-year financial statements that we've prepared now for the end of September, we started to do that disclosure. That's what we are saying on the column on quarter two. 131, it's misstatement of accruals. It's the same reasons that you've got under commitments where we don't get the accurate information from implementing agents. But just to mention that some of us who did accounting some years back, we just know that you've got creditors. But lately you need to split that between your payables and your accruals. Your payables are those creditors where by the end of the financial year you've gotten the service, you've gotten the invoice, but because the invoice came too late before the financial year, you have not paid. So that's your payables. Your accruals are those where you've gotten the services by the end of the financial, but you have not gotten the invoice yet. So that's the accrual. So, within the department, we are able to clamp down on that. But immediately you go to implementing agents who are not properly monitored because of the capacity, lack of capacity, then you land in this situation. But as I said, it's something that should be something of the past going forward. And then slide 132, it's a continuation of the accrual story. 133, we've had a few situations where of irregular expenditure where awards would have been made in a situation where the triple PSA was not followed. For example, one of the awards that happened would be a situation where we advertise bids multi-bids, you know, like we mentioned 61 schools at some stage, then people must come for various briefing sessions. And that happened in 2017. Then an agreement was apparently reached that if you sign one attendance register, you don't have to sign the other attendance registers. So, although that was not documented. Now, one of the bidders who was awarded, and just one example, one of the bidders who was awarded was found not to have signed one of the attendance registers. So, meaning, if the advert said attendance of a briefing session is compulsory and your name doesn't appear in the attendance register, it means you did not attend the briefing session. So it means that you are awarded irregularly. So it's just one of the examples. What we've done going forward, we have since the end of the financial year, basically, we've had the training sessions by the for the bid committees, for the SEM staff and managers. We've had two trainings at least. We've had one by the National School of Governance, and we've had one by National Treasury to refresh officials as to what is expected of them as the law keeps evolving. That is a continuation, Chair. Because one of the things that the AG also raised was that because it's them who picked up some of the irregularities, it means that the irregular expenditure in our financials was misstated. So what we are saying on slide 134 is that going forward and starting with the interim financials, we've disclosed the irregular expenditure correctly. Slide 131. It says 131. It's for some reason the computer numbering we haven't gotten it right, but it's the next slide. Yeah, it's a slide that deals with item 6. No, it's an IT problem. An IT problem. It's a slide that deals with item 6 irregular. Material irregularity. So, lately, as all of us may know, there has been an amendment to the Public Audit Act, and that amendment, the effect of that amendment is that over and above the AG picking up a irregular expenditure, they may then zoom into one or more items and say, we regard this as material irregularity. And then what they then would do is that they would give the accounting officer time to deal with that material irregularity and to give feedback to the AG. And if the AG is not satisfied, they may then issue what we call a debt certificate, a certificate of debt. Not death, to the accounting officer to say this money should be recovered from you because you failed to recover it from so and so. So this is one of those issues, but that it was only one in the current financial year, and it was cost incurred for remedial construction for projects undertaken by Adopt a School Foundation. This project happened some years back. 2013-14, where Adopt a School Foundation was appointed, did work. They're still completing that work. Money was paid to them. But what we've done is that, and that's what we are saying on under quarter two progress. What we have done is that we've followed up with them. We know that there's money that is still due to them. We've done calculations as to what they owe us, and then once those payments or those calculations from their side, or those invoices from our side, comes through, we will then offset what they owe us from what we need to pay them. So that project is ongoing. The AG has accepted our explanation, and they're waiting to see what the result would be ultimately when we do that offsetting. The next slide, Chair, is basically similar to the slide dealing with the regular expenditure, those two slides that deal with regular expenditure, except that we give you more details as to what we've done. For example, under progress, quarter two progress, we've done investigations because we've got an investigations committee within the department, which is headed by the director, internal audit. We've done investigations of 11 out of the 20 cases, and then we are in the process of finalizing reports on that. And then that is under the bold heading irregular expenditure, that is a confirmed irregular expenditure. Under consequence management, the DG has written letters to affected officials who were members of the bid committees, to explain why action should not be taken against them, and those processes are in place. Under possibly regular expenditure, because lately there's in government accounting there's that split between irregular expenditure confirmed and possibly regular expenditure, and the same with fruitless and wastefulness, confirmed and possible. So under possibly irregular expenditure, we've done 3 out of 13 investigations, and reports are being finalized on that. And under fruitless and wasteful expenditure, cases that relate to years prior to 2018-19 have been investigated, and we are finalizing the reports. The only cases that are still outstanding for investigation are the latest cases for 2018-19. And under possible fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we are saying there that we've investigated 70% of those cases, and we should produce reports to that effect. Chair, that's where the finances stop. I'll ask Ms. Mbonambi to continue with the last few slides, the two slides basically that relate to qualification items on non-financials, and these qualification items only relate end up in the management report. They don't go to the audit, final audit report. Okay, I see Carol is back, so she'll deal with that. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, DG. I just wanted to, are there additions that there's some members would like to make before we engage with your report?
So, Chair, there are matters related to performance management of the audit that we just want Carol to deal with quickly. It's just two slides. So be brief.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I promise not to be too long. I think, Mr. Chair, honourable members, we have a slide 133, 134, and 135. I will just summarize them. We had key recommendations in relation to record keeping, key recommendations in relation to how we package our evidence, and key recommendations in relation to just making sure.
133,
134, and 135. I'll deal with them altogether, because the last three slides, sorry, they deal with the AGS. Oh, okay, my apologies. So really they relate to the AGSA's pronouncements on performance information in the audit report and their recommendations. So the recommendations relate to issues around just how performance is reported, how the data is packaged, and the information and the process of providing information on performance. So in relation to certain targets, I had indicated, for instance, the lesson planning, the difference between subjects. We're going to be separating out physical science and math. So that's a technical issue in future APPs and reports. In relation to record keeping, for instance, we're going to be doing a lot more work around justifying the diagnostic and the teacher self-assessment. And for instance, in the current APP and the future APPs, we'll be looking more at reporting, the national department's responsibility for reporting on what's happening in provinces in relation to teacher self subject content knowledge. And I think the information in program 4 relating to the business process and how evidence is packed. Sometimes the evidence is there. We're going to be strengthening, for instance, data analysis in relation to how the evidence is packed within the department, and we've already started the work on that with the program managers. So those are the three areas that the AG had indicated, and we'll be reporting to both committees in the National Assembly and here on progress. Thank you very much.
Are there additions to you or from your?
No additions from us.
yes, I just want to say that it is, what is this, slide 136? We are not a portfolio committee. So you are not addressing us. You'll tell us later what will be given to us as a select committee. This is for the portfolio committee. maybe in the next meeting we'll deal with it. It's becoming clearer and clearer why you are where you are now, you know, after this presentation. And the kind of interventions that you said you are putting in place, I just hope they work for you. We'll be happy, because what makes us happy is when people get a clean audit. We're not happy when we, you know, like give people negative feedback that you are not doing well, this has standard 9 accounting mistakes, because, you know, if you don't have the details and you read the report, it gives you that impression. If they say misstatement, what does a misstatement do? You know, overstatement, whatever those things. And we have this acidity that's been with us all these years, and everything about it, what you do, whatever you get from the AG, it's negative. So their contribution in the department is creating more problems than they were before. Before the RCD, there were not all these problems. I'm worried about some of the things on slide 90, procurement processes. We listen to lots of stories. We follow what is happening in the Zondo Commission. We know there's a general perception in the country, wrong or right, that there is corruption in the public service. So when you see things like the word misstatement and all this and that, and
SCM processes were not followed, immediately what comes to your mind is, oh, I've heard this in the Zondo Commission, there was talk about, you know. And so, therefore, the impression it creates is that there's nothing, there's something unbecoming in the department. That is the reaction. I mean, this is what the allocation, but in slide 119. You're talking about what you pay to municipalities, but I want to know, how much do you owe municipalities as a department? You know, our last meeting with the councillors, what is this body? With Salga, I'm sorry, yeah. And what Salga said was that they are owed by government departments. And because they're owed by government departments, they owe ESCOM and other people. That if you pay them, they'll be able to pay their bills. So, do schools owe municipalities and how much do they owe them? And what is it that we have in place to make sure that municipalities get what is due to them? There was something about the principals, training of principals, or that all provinces attended were part of it except the Western Cape. If you could, no, I just want to give us some more information about that. Honourable members, so over to you. Yeah, Honourable Dongay.
Okay, thanks, Chair. No, not today. Not today. Okay. Thanks, Chair. Thanks for the department about the information you gave us. As Chair said, we are becoming clear and clear. But there's some not clear. Some are clear. Okay, I just want to ask you guys, in the manager in 4IR, I don't know if it's a DG or a manager or what, but whatever, in 4IR, you have 12 digitized content. How many in 24 schools? In fact, how many content is supposed to be digitized? And how many schools have been connected? And then, if you can give us the breakdown on that 24, how many in Eastern Cape, where in Eastern Cape? You can't say in OR Tambo. OR Tambo is so big. If you can say in this municipality, for instance, in Nyandini, because Nyandini is my constituency, I'm sorry to say that. And you say in Nyandini, in which area in Nyandini? The second one, you're talking about the African language. Are you employing a teacher for African language? Because if you say, I'm going to teach a course, I'm going to teach, or isiZulu, you can't take me. I'm speaking Xhosa. I can't go and speak and teach isiZulu. I'm not quite sure whether on that, or you understand my question. So, and then on your slide. ezinye neziphendule bendihamba ndizibhala ke yabo. On your program form, it's about the planning, you know? You've got 50 schools. You have achieved how many? You plan to build 50 schools. And you achieved 30 what? I'm not quite sure. Going to buy them. 21, eh? And then 29 not achieved. Can you please tell us why or give us more information? I don't want somebody to say it's partial. When you say I must go to Bloemfontein, I must go to Bloemfontein and report on Bloemfontein. I can't report in somehow and say, hey, I was on my way to Bloemfontein, hey, my car has been broken. So it means I'm not achieving that. So I don't want partial. Let's make it, it's not achieved. We must agree on that. Sorry to say that. And then, on slide 35. Ima, slow down. Not yet. Sorry, chair. Okay, I will come back.
You'll come back. There is enough time for all of us. I'll take Honorable Christian and then Honorable Majandona and Honorable Baha in that order.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for your presentation. I'd like to start off by the sanitation issue, which is still, after a number of years, still seems to be a problem in the country. The deadline was supposed to be more than 10 years ago. That we were supposed to eradicate bucket systems from our schools, and the deadline was again shifted. So my question is, by when do you think that the bucket system will be eradicated in our school system? We've had numerous issues, children are still dying, and yet it's still a lingering issue. Has a new deadline been set, and are we going to achieve this deadline eventually? My second question is about infrastructure. I've heard that consequent management and corrective management has been put in place for infrastructure and development in schools. My question is also about the infrastructure that 50 buildings were supposed to be built and only 21 were built. I would like to know per province the number of schools or the number of buildings that were supposed to be built and who are the provinces that are in fact not achieving their targets. And I would like to know what kind of consequent management is the department holding in place. Are they being held to account? And will they complete these schools? Because infrastructure still remains a problem after so many years. Our schools are falling apart. Kids must move from one school to another as schools are falling apart. So when are we going to get that right? And I feel as if the problem is also about vetting of service providers. Are provinces vetting service providers before actually awarding tenders to service providers? The Funza Lusaka the soccer placements. Many students have been contacting us about placements. If you could give us an idea about the Funza Lusaka placements, I see there is the province, how many were placed and how many have not been placed. It would be good if you can give us a roll out about where placements are still needed, so that we can forward that to particular students who are completing their degrees. So that we can assist in placement, because oftentimes we get a call from students who are busy finishing their degrees, and maybe we can assist in some way. I would just like to know about the head of infrastructure that has been appointed. My last question. I do have more, but I will leave it. Oh, sorry, my second last question. The head of infrastructure that has been appointed. I would like to know what the duties of that person is, because we've now already mentioned numerous times that infrastructure is an issue. I would like to know what the duties and functions of that appointee is, and whether there is an action plan per province so that we can monitor the implementation and the completion of infrastructure programs per province over the next 5 years. And then lastly, under your program 5, I see that you have not mentioned, because I think health falls under there. I'm not too sure, I might be speaking under correction. Student or learner health falls under program 5. Now I see that you have not mentioned your HPV rollout, neither have you mentioned the type of successes you've had there, the type of money that is spent, that was spent on HPV rollout. And I would also like to know, in terms of future budgeting for HPV injections for our learners, and it has made the news recently that such HPV, the money allocated, the budget allocated to that will be decreased in the coming years. And I would like to know why that is. Has the rollout not been successful, or, and what is the future as far as that is concerned? Thank you, Chairperson.
Slide 90. Procurement processes are delaying processes of construction. You don't just construct without procurement. So are you suggesting that procurement should be put aside and that we just build schools? I don't really understand this slide. Madam Lu.
Thank you, Chair, and greetings to everyone. And we thank the department for the presentation. And we also want to say that this department is the most important department, because it's basic education. That's where our kids are being molded, is the foundation. So I think we need to really zoom into the department and make sure that we have the quality teachers at schools to teach the subjects, because by the time a kid is in grade 4, he or she should be able to read and write. And I see that the department has a program of an early grade learning program, but mine is to check which provinces are this program in, and are you also going deep into rural areas, because I think that's where the problem is. And also the assessment of the teachers, I think it should be a must that the teachers should be assessed in the subject that they are teaching our kids, because you can't be teaching English, I mean you can't be teaching math when you should be teaching English or isiZulu. So I think that's where the problem starts. And also some of the questions I was covered in, but your targets, I hear that you say they were partially achieved, but you don't tell us out of 10 we only achieved 2 or 3, so partially can be anything. And also the building of new schools and renovating the old ones. I think our infrastructure is not into standards. And also, I think we also need to do away with the toilets, because they are the cause of most of the accidents that are happening in schools. And the other one was the tablets that are being given to schools. There's a school where I used to go to in my early age when I was still young. As in primary school. They do have tablets and they have a trolley of that internet thing, but they are not even using it. One, they complain that it's too heavy, and even if they take it outside, they can't get the signal. So the tablets are there sitting and not being used. And there are about 1,400 to 1,500 kids, and they only have 20 tablets. And the principal was complaining that which kids is he going to give the tablets to? Because the parents also asked that if you only have 20 tablets, so which one, how are you going to choose the kids to give the tablets to? So it's also not assisting that school. And the school is still in a bad condition. The class that I was doing grade one is still there, and it's not good. The other one, should I ask all the questions about? And also, we owe this a general report. I think the other thing that is not happening in my department is that we are watching our findings, but the department don't then deal with the findings. Because if we dealt with last year's or the last financial year findings, this year those findings should be found again. So I think someone is not doing what they're supposed to be doing, and I think people are too relaxed in their job. And if we don't really follow up on them and monitor them, it becomes a problem. I think that's all I would say. Thank you, Chair. But I'll come back, Chair, if I remember something. And I know you will allow me. Thank you.
No, thank you, Chair. I see that members are jelly tech over my floor in the bubble here, Chair. Looks like we have the whole day. Chairperson, thank you. And I would like to also thank the department for the presentation this morning. But I have a few issues that I want to raise. It was a marathon presentation, and therefore, DM, I'm sure that you will know that there might be a marathon of questions as well, of clarity that is sought. I think, Chair, I'm covered on the partial achievement. Because for me, it's either you achieve or you don't achieve. And so that should be left at that. My questions might not be in a particular order in terms of the presentation itself, but one acting DG probably is around the ECD migration. I know that it's a huge ask on both social development and basic education. It's not an easy task to synergize, as it were, for the possibility of migration, but I would want to check whether you are confident that you have all the plans in place to make sure that this is achieved, and probably maybe are you considering any timelines in order to achieve it. On slide 16, if I remember quite well, where there's talk about school feeding scheme program, I see in the previous year or years, the department was reporting on behalf of the provinces. But I see in this report that has changed, if I understood it correctly. Now, I think there's reference to a point that says provinces will report on their own in terms of how they are doing with the program. And knowing that there's a lot of issues around it in different provinces, where probably the department is
funding these programs and yet they don't reach the recipients. And so if it's then relegated to provinces to report, how is the department monitoring to ensure that those that are intended to get something, are they really getting it? So how do we monitor it? Again, in relation to provinces, Chairperson, the department has dispersed the money 100% for provinces and municipalities. But I think my question would be, how is the department following the money and ensuring that money is used for what it is intended for? Because any malpractice by provinces have a bearing on the performance of the national department. So how are our monitoring systems ensuring that what we give in terms of provinces and municipalities, money is utilized for that specific purpose? DM, on the issue of ASIDI and the fact that we are closing schools that are not adequately utilized in terms of having enough learners. How do you balance the two? You are closing schools, you are building new schools. Isn't it maybe proper that you consider ensuring that you build infrastructure in the existing schools, change focus on those to ensure that they are utilized as opposed to spending money on building new schools where it might not be a necessity to have a new school? So you are closing schools, you are opening or building new ones. How do we balance the two? Also taking into account what Chairperson raised in terms of ASIDI and the challenges that ASIDI has brought in the department. The purpose, I think, was very good, but I think we are dealing with unintended consequences now of that project, as it were. There was a slide that had learner access to textbooks, and there's variation in terms of some having more access than others. Now, I wanted to understand now in layman's terms, does that mean that there are learners without textbooks where access is not 100%? Does it mean that some go through the year without having access? Or what does it mean in simple terms? Funza Lishaka funding, Chairperson, that is administered or dispersed by NSFAS. Taking into account that the same NSFAS had its own challenges. The last time I remember, they were put under administration. And yet, we are trusting them to also disperse on behalf of the department. Is it because the department does not have capacity, or is there no other way that we can then make sure? Because if you look at it, I think there was a report, a mention, that there is no synergy in terms of the records that the department has in terms of Funza Lishaka and what NSFAS reports around. There's a discrepancy, so to speak. Doesn't that talk to incapacity of NSFAS to deal with its own mandate when we are also adding to say they must also take charge of Funza Lishaka as well, which I think the general view out there, Funza Lishaka is quite a very, very good and positive initiative. And most, learners or children are able to access it. Don't you think that maybe if we were to take ownership as the department, have it in-house, make sure that the same way that we've now secured a unit for infrastructure and all that, have a unit, DM, that would look at it to make sure that both qualitatively and quantitatively it does reach as many recipients as it is anticipated. Chairperson, on the contractor cash flow and stuff, I think there was it was already mentioned by one of the members. What can we allude this problem to? The fact that to give someone a contract and without, maybe it might be incorrect to say without, but I guess I can say that someone without resources to complete the project as it were. Because failure to do this reflects back on the department, because you have targets to build so many schools or improve infrastructure in this quantity. And yet, contractors fail us. And I know that they fail having been paid partially what is owed to them by the department. How do we recover what would be lost? How do we make sure that such contractors are penalized for not meeting up to the agreement that they would have entered into with the department? The second last one, Chebetu. The National School Safety Framework. I think we've noted, I think we've been talking about it, Chebetu, that our schools, you know, are turning into war zones where at times when a child goes to school, the parent is not sure whether the child will come back alive or not. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but that's how it is. They are stabbing each other. Teachers are kind of intimidated by learners because there cannot be any corporal punishment. And so it's a kind of free-for-all as it is, which puts a lot of strain, I guess, on the department itself to find alternative or corrective measures in instilling discipline in our school. But they go to schools with knives and all dangerous weapons that they can get access to. Are we confident that, I see that targets are met in that regard in terms of the report, but are we confident that with partnership with other departments, like probably your social development, SAPS, are these departments all on board in making sure that we all curb this violent and aggressive behavior in our schools? And the last one, Chebetu, is on the sexual and reproductive health subject. I guess it's if I got it correctly, it's in everybody's mind at this point as to how far can you go when you're breaking down sex to young people. Remember, the intention is good, but some would have a counter argument that says the more you open up a sexual in conversation with kids, you are also alerting them that you can now do this act, you are ready for it. Meanwhile, it's a preventative kind of educational matter that seeks to prepare our learners with all the issues that are relating to sex in general. Are we as a department then happy with broad consultation, buy-in from all the role players in terms of this subject? Chebetu, let me end there. I'm not coming back. Thank you.
GM, let's get some answers where there are answers, and where there are no answers to our questions, you can still do them in writing. And if there are other questions that members feel they need to make follow-up on at a later stage, we may send those questions and then get the answers in writing, because we can't finish everything in one sitting. Yeah, over to you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I think you will get more than 50% out of the team is here and they are all ready to respond. They came here ready. I will give to the acting DG, but I would also prefer that he comes last so that the team members respond on specific issues that is related to their area of responsibility.
Chair, if you'll allow us, I think what we'll do is to break them down into the themes that have emerged. And just ask those specific colleagues to then respond to them. So can we start, Mr. Mafoko and Mr. van der Westhuizen with the infrastructure ones? Maybe Mr. van der Westhuizen can start by outlining what your job is.
Honourable Chairperson and members, it's a privilege to be here. For my sins, I've inherited all these problems that you've highlighted so clearly.
Can you press this top into the system, otherwise the oil will still work.
You could use this one. That's not one there.
Chair, can you hear me now?
Yeah,
go. Sometimes it helps to just change the position. See, what I said is that for my sins, I've inherited this responsibility that the committee has so clearly highlighted. There are some significant challenges, and I wish some of those challenges were not mine, but unfortunately I believe they are mine. So if we can start with some of the plans. What became very clear in the time that I've spent now with the department is that there are significant challenges in the selection of service providers, and that is the selection of implementing agents, the selection of professional service providers, and also the selection of contractors. So we will have to carefully review our whole approach to the procurement of such service providers. So what is the criteria that we use? Because you need to balance, and there was a lot of talk about balance. You need to balance service provision, but also economic development. So if you say, but let's just take the people that have proved themselves to be competent and just work with listed construction companies. That would have proved to be a very wrong approach. First of all, there will be no impound, and secondly, most of the listed companies have now fallen under business rescue. So it would have been a terrible approach. So we need to be careful of how we do these things. You need to balance this of what is appropriate. We're also working mostly through implementing agents. We're making use of organs of state as implementing agents, organs like the Development Bank of South Africa, the IDT, Kuga Development Corporation, and a couple of others. And even on that side, some of them have proved to be more reliable than others. So what we've done in the last week is we've called a meeting of all these implementing agents responsible for our city specific, and we presented to them the total allocation of projects that were given to them since the beginning of the city, sort of cumulative. What if we as a department handed over to you expecting you to do your job, and how many of those have you completed? Now, you can imagine a meeting like that. As my first meeting with implement agent, you're not winning the popularity contest. You're creating a lot of tension in that meeting. So as we're sitting here today and also yesterday, there were some of our colleagues who had meetings with the Development Bank, and they had meetings with Kuga. And on Friday, we're meeting the Mvula Trust and also the IDT, where we will then address exactly that gap. If I've given you 200 projects, you've killed 50. What is the status of the 150? I think one of the members said, don't tell me you're halfway to Bloemfontein. Mm-hmm. I want you at Bloemfontein. Mm-hmm. The meeting is already started. Why are you not there? So we are unpacking those in detail. Exactly what is the story? Where are you? Where are you getting stuck? Where is that specific place where we as the department must come and intervene or assist? So we are unpacking those actions. Then in the implementing agent agreement between the department and these various agents, there's some genetic issues of what we want from you and what. But then in around about 2013, my predecessors drafted an addendum to those service agreements. And that is the teeth was drafted into that thing. And that addendum stated very clearly that if we allocate a job to an implement agent, we expect the implement agent to do it, and any delays on that project, whether it's a procurement delay, whether it's a service provider delay, whether it's inclement weather or all these other nice things, it's your problem. Deal with it. And you will be held accountable for that delay. If that delay is an order of a month, we have the right as the department to intervene, meaning we can step into your shoes and we can take over those service providers and we can deal with them. And that dealing with them include actions such as we can request you to remove this architect from the job or to remove this foreman of this contractor or to remove this project manager on your side, in your own team, from this job. It may even go so far as the department insisting that some of these contracts get terminated. We can, in fact, also terminate the contract with an implement agent. And then the best sentence of all in that addendum that we highlighted last week, and that's when it goes very quiet in the meeting, is when you said that clause, whatever, reads that if the department choose to intervene and stand in your shoes and handle this thing on your behalf, any costs associated with such intervention will be for your account. And that's why we're having the following up meetings, yesterday, today, and then Thursday, Friday, and I think the last meeting is on Monday. And that is, one of the honorable members asked, what is the plan? This is part of the plan. We've inherited this history. Let's fix it. We can't run away with it. You can't always come and have this blame game. Let's fix it. So this is our strategy to fix it, the history. If we look at the infrastructure challenge, it's also important to note that it is a lot bigger than a city. A city is a small thing in the bigger scheme. A city is a 1.3 billion program. The bigger thing is the provincial program, which is about a 10 billion program. So there's a much bigger story out there than just the city. So we need to deal with them. The challenges are very similar on those. There was a question about there's some nice questions about bucket eradication. I think Mr. Mofoko is very competent to talk about buckets and also the deadline on sanitation. The issue of migration, I think that's a very critical question in the whole South African context at the moment. We have significant migration of population. Significant. So where you had a school in the old days in the Free State on the farm there, because there were some farm workers there, that farm is no longer operational, so that school is no longer operational. And what resulted in planning of new schools under a city, initially there was a list of 520 schools that was deemed to be inappropriate. About half of them got cancelled because of the rationalization program of the specific provinces. So we can say that this is like a moving target, but we must do what is right. If there's no sense in fixing that farm school in the Free State just because it's a mud school, then we mustn't do it. And that's part of it. So that challenge is significant. We had a meeting the other day with the MEC for Gauteng, mentioning that in Gauteng, and that's part of the migration, I think they have 30,000 unplaced learners for next year. So at a big school ratio of about 1,000 kids per school, we need to have a couple of miracles. There are 50 new schools in Gauteng before January. That is migration. So where does those people come from? They come from some rural areas. So we need to deal with this challenge, and that's a constant thing that we need to deal with. And I think it's not unique to education. You will have the same thing in the health sector and all of those as well. And we need all the assistance we can get to say, okay, how do we deal with this? That we not go ahead and build a school there, but there's no people there. Then you've built a white elephant. That's worse than delaying a school and building one and consolidating some of these schools. So under the city program, part of the challenges that we've got is this moving target where they have an initial list of schools, and then through rationalization, some of those schools then get consolidated into one big school instead of 10 small schools. There was a question from the chair or somebody from the contractor cash flow and failure. No, colleague, I think it was from the honor member on that side. I think you are right. There is only one way. We must be very careful who we select. And once we've selected the service provider, enter into an appropriate contract with that service provider, whether it's an architect or an engineer or a contractor or an implementer, enter into a proper contract that has got management elements in it. And then we manage it in terms of that. So if this contractor is supposed to submit a program and a guarantee and he fails to do so, get rid of him immediately. Because if he can't even come up with a program and he can't come up with a proper cash flow and he can't provide a guarantee, this guy does not have the capacity. So the longer you keep him, the bigger the problems. And eventually it ends up in court. So it is exactly like that. We need to implement the contracts that we put in place and we implement the remedial action that's in place. So part of the discussion that we're having with all these implement agents now, if that is the school, who did you appoint on the school? Why are you late? Is it the contract issue? What is the contract? Is it the JBCC contract? Is it the GCC contract? Is it the NEC3 contract? What are the remedial measures in the contract for dealing with a late contractor? And what have you implemented? If you have not implemented, now the red flag goes up and says, oh, does that mean we will do it on your behalf? Then we will do so. We've got engineers, we've got conservators in our employ. We will activate them, we will do it on your behalf, and we will recover that cost from you. And the bad word in that contract, I think the first, on the financial side, is they say offset. I will take it from whatever money we owe you. It may be you defaulting in Limpopo and you're doing an excellent job in the Eastern Cape. We will take it from that Eastern Cape money that we owe you. So that at the time. Can I ask Mr. Mufoku to respond to some of the details on the sanitation, the bucket system, the new deadline, and also the question about the 50 schools? Mufoku.
Thank you, Chair, Deputy Minister, colleagues. Chair, I think all the four honourable members raised serious concern about the target of the 50 schools that was set, and 21 was achieved, and you've got 29 schools that were not completed in the year under review. And I think CFO tried to explain that in his presentation, but just to indicate, colleagues, that honourable members rather, that we had a challenge. One, there are two issues that led to us not meeting that target. The first one, around September last year, about 10 of the sites in the Eastern Cape were invaded by what is called the Eastern Cape Contractors Association, Black Contractors Association, and they stopped construction on those sites. And those sites were at an advanced stage, and they were some of those that were targeted to be completed in the financial year. Negotiations, or rather, what the Eastern Cape contractors demanded was that they should be the ones who are appointed to construct those schools and not those contractors that were appointed. What happened is that in some of the sites, the communities rallied against those contractors because we used local communities as laborers, as subcontractors, and so on. In some of the sites, the communities rallied against the Eastern Cape Contractors Association and were able to get back to the works. But in some, we had to go on extensive negotiations with the organization, and the matter was, we even went into the builder's break in December with the matter not resolved, and it was resolved around January, February when they went back on site, with the result that we lost about 5 to 6 months of construction work in those sites, and unfortunately they couldn't be completed. The second issue, so that's the major one that led to us not meeting our target. The second one was that there were a number of schools that we were targeting to use alternative technology. And alternative technology is very quick to deploy, and we had targeted about 9 months to do those contracts. However, when we were at the end of the procurement process, the Department of Trade Industry came to us and said, you had not declared local content in terms of steel in your tender document. our understanding and reading of the note was that for those particular type of constructions, you did not need to declare the local content because this is alternative technology. It's not like you are building a warehouse or a railway line that you are using huge amounts. I mean, you cannot go to China to get five window panes and five, you know. So our reading of the concept note was that way. But DTI came back and said, no, you go ahead, you must know that the moment you appoint a contractor, this is going to become irregular expenditure or fruitless or anything. Yeah, well, irregular, yes. So even we had our minister to write to the Minister of Trade and Industry to try and get a deviation on that. Unfortunately, the Minister of Trade and Industry didn't allow that deviation to happen. So what it meant is that we had to stop that procurement of those and we had to start the procurement afresh. And that is why the 29 schools and the two issues, the Eastern Cape contractor issue and the DTI local content issue, that make us not meet the target chain. The second issue is around the sanitation from Honourable Member, that the deadline actually for sanitation in terms of the norms and standards was 2016, which correctly we did not meet. But I just need to make a quick correction here. We do not have any bucket toilets in our schools. What we have are pit toilets, mm-hmm. and that is what we are dealing with. So that mm-hmm. distinction. So the new deadline, you'd remember that last year the SAFE initiative was launched, the sanitation appropriate for education was launched, and an allocation was made for a period of 3 years to complete the eradication of inappropriate sanitation in schools, which takes us to the 2021-22 financial year. However, the minister had made it very clear to us that the 2021-22 is too far. So what we are doing is to target that by the next financial year, all being possible, we should be finishing the dealing with all inappropriate sanitation in our schools. However, the second part of your question, Honourable Member, I think it came from the chair around procurement delays on slide 90 relates to that. The allocation on SAFE was made in the budget in March, in February rather, and it is only then that we knew how much are we going to have for that for the current financial year. So the money became available in April. So it is only then that we could start in earnest with the procurement process, because you cannot initiate a procurement process if you don't have the budget, you know. So we only started the procurement process in April. So what slide 90 was indicating was that the delays in terms of starting the procurement process at that time up to now, it's only now that we are beginning to do the appointment of contractors. But sanitation is a short-term kind of a project, so we are confident that a larger chunk of those projects will be completed by the end of the financial year. So what the slide was saying is that to explain it in the slide, maybe it didn't come out clear in terms of the choice of word as to what we meant by the delays in terms of procurement. So, Chair, we are not in any way implying that we are going to do away with procurement. And finally, the projects that were delayed from the 21 that were not achieved, I think from Honourable Member here, we are currently doing projects in terms of inappropriate structures, projects in the Eastern Cape and Free State only. In other provinces, we have completed those. And again, just a question of clarity, the projects that we are reporting on here are ICD projects and not provincial projects. So we are doing inappropriate structures in Eastern Cape and Free State. In terms of sanitation, it's in the Eastern Cape, KZN, Limpopo, Northwest. These are the projects that we are completing in those four provinces. Thank you, DJ.
Chair. Dr. Simulani, can you deal with those? I think it's the ones on the fourth industrial revolution, ECD textbooks.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, and colleagues. Starting from the question on the digitization of the content or the learning content in different subjects, the question was about the amount of content that is being digitized. Our approach has been to digitize high enrollment subjects. For instance, when it comes to FET level, we've got 12 high enrollment subjects, so all of those have been digitized.
What are those?
Those will include subjects like geography, history, business studies, I think mathematics, medical science, life sciences, the list goes on.
All of them.
Okay.
You said it's not all, but the
So it's actually the 12 high enrollment subjects that have been digitized and prioritized for that purpose. In terms of the monitoring of the 24 schools, we don't have the details in terms of the distribution of the content in those 24 schools. I think that those details can be provided after this meeting. And then coming to the implementation of the early grade reading assessment, instrument that is implemented across all provinces, all 9 provinces. What DBE does, it selects a sample of schools, 10 schools. For instance, this year, we take a sample of about 10 schools where per province, and then we also add our own monitoring exercise to verify the information that comes from provinces, because provinces also do use the instrument to monitor the progress that is made in teaching learners at foundation phase how to read and read with proficiency. About the school that has got 20 tablets, as in Lovini, Honourable Member Madlanduna, I think as DBE we are going to conduct an investigation and make a follow-up in terms of why is the technology that has been provided to the school not being utilized. But from our perspective, to schools where we have supplied the technology, we make sure that we provide training. We ensure that there is connectivity, such that the connectivity that we provide is provided per individual school. So each individual school is given a server so that they will have access to Wi-Fi connectivity to address the problems of rurality as they may come into effect. On ECD migration, a few milestones have been achieved already. Where the whole process started, it started with the two departments, basic education and social development, engaging in terms of understanding the whole brief in terms of what the migration of the early childhood development program would entail. So we started from conceptualizing that so that there is agreement between the two ministers. And as we speak, the concurrence has been realized between the two ministers, between our minister and a minister of social development. And that has actually then led to the planning starting In order to get the planning started, we had to, as basic education now, we had to set up structures. So we established 8 work streams. Those are work streams for functions that are implicated in the whole transfer. One can look at budget allocation, one can, that is the finances, one can look at HR provisioning, one can look at legal and policy amendments, because those are things that need to happen. So in total, we've got 8 different work streams that have begun putting those plans in place in terms of each function, what needs to happen, what are the milestones. For instance, for the first 5 years up to 2024. So we already have a draft plan, a draft implementation plan for the migration. For instance, from the legal and policy work stream, the work has been done to an extent that the proclamation that would be made by the president early in the new year has already been drafted, as an example. And we have also tried to solicit funding, because we felt as basic education that we needed to understand the entire sector, the early childhood development program in its totality, before we can take over the function. Therefore, we decided that early in 2020 we'd be conducting an audit of the entire sector, so that we understand the scope of the entire program, and therefore that is also going to inform our planning going forward. So all I'm saying is a few milestones have been realized already. We've got the draft plan in place. We are waiting for the proclamation that will be pronounced by the state president, after which then it's going to be all systems go, because it's going to be opening up for the engagements in the department. So in a nutshell, the ECD migration for basic education means that basic education will be responsible for the coordination of services, as well as providing leadership, even coming with regulations, norms and standards for programs that are offered in the centers, as well as norms and standards for infrastructure that will support for a quality provision of early childhood development. That's basically where we are in that regard. On the textbooks provision, we work with provincial departments who submit their orders through basic education. They submit orders for their schools for the delivery of textbooks. So we rely on the information and the numbers, that number of learners and textbooks for which they are ordered for learners, and therefore at the beginning of the year, after the delivery of the textbooks, we usually also go back to provinces and ask them to provide us with gaps when they are inadequate supply of textbooks, and therefore to make the top-ups as a follow-up to the distribution of textbooks. That's basically how it works and how we work with provinces. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, before we continue, I'm checking your time. So if you're happy for us to continue, then you know, then we can do so. But I'm just mindful of your time. So if you can give us a sense.
Yeah, we are managing our time correctly. We started around 8 in the morning, so we'll be. Yeah, we can't get all the answers in one day. But suffice to say that there's from this engagement, it's clear that at least something is being done to turn the situation around. And what else can we do except to give you support? But what we'll do in our meetings earlier this morning was that we need, as a committee, as a select committee, we need to meet with the portfolio committee so that whatever we do in our engagement with you, because from your reports you are seeing us as one thing, because you refer to us as the portfolio committee. But we, we will meet with them from next year onwards, so that we share what interventions can we, so that our interventions are focused, so they don't clash. Because sometimes you see you want things in this format, and somebody wants the report in that format, so you end up spending more time moving from one format to the other. You know. DM, closing remarks.
Thank you, Chair. We appreciate what you're saying at the meeting with the portfolio committee, but the challenge with your scope of work is that you are more in provinces. That's why even the questions are based in provinces, yet we are here accounting for the 23.6 billion rand, which is given to the Department of Basic Education nationally. Then the other billions are performed by the provinces, which also are a legal structure on its own in terms of the constitution of the republic, and they account to the provincial legislature, which even if some of the things want to interfere, when we come into that stage, it looks like more of interfering than intervening, but we work together. But our work is the, what is this nice term? The Minister Lavin. Concurrent.
Concurrent function.
Concurrent function. So we cannot play a big brother, though. If provinces are not performing, we are accountable. That's why we have these structures at a technical level as well as at a CM level, so that we work together. Like most of the questions about how many schools, how many this, how many that, we may not be in a position to account, because our report here that we brought before you is the report of the functioning of the Department of Basic Education. But We really understand. That's why if we can get a question asking us about provinces, we still have to go back to the province and say, what can we do? But even if we say we've strengthened the infrastructure, our infrastructure unit will work with provinces so that we come up with a uniform approach in infrastructure, unlike what is happening now, that the school in province X will be built. Same school, same number of classrooms, 72 million, the other one has been built at 32 million, and all these things. So we are moving towards uniformity, though it may not be 100%. But generally, we appreciate. We had a round table meeting with the what was it called? ICT people. Yes. That, like, the point that was raised, that if you give 20 tablets to 100 learners, how do you expect them to function? But we said, let us focus on the special schools. Let's add they our focus on issues of ICT. That when you come to a special school, you give all the children, because those ones are tailor-made for them. If it's a hearing or it's a computer for blind, whatever, let each child have his own tablet than bringing them to, and they appreciate it, and because we, the department, cannot have sufficient resources to can procure all this, but we work with partners, and they promise that we'll be working together. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, DM, we, you and us as the department, and the select committee, we have something in common. We play oversight. Mm-hmm. We play oversight on, and you play oversight to some extent on provinces. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know, there are certain things in provinces where you can make certain interventions and do support service and you know, coaching and all that. Honourable members, this meeting is adjourned. I wish you could.